thanks for inviting me. My talk will be about do-it-yourself measures for academic success, which is about some work, current and future work from Tom Price, Sabine Hossenfelder, and also me. So I will start with a quick introduction to what I mean by academic measures and what we think about them. And then I will try to connect this to our current future work. Just to be clear, by measure for academic success, I mean things like citation counts, age index, journal impact factors, papers of journals people publish in, something like that. And I will take the perspective of the community in this talk, not like the perspective of a funding agency, which of course also has an interest in measures for academic success. Okay, so measures. So the basic idea we have is that measures should actually help scientists, should work for scientists. And I've listed here a few properties which we think measures should have, but not only measures themselves, but also how measures are used, how this whole business of ranking people by measures and stuff works. So the first point is that we think measures should be heterogeneous. Basically, there should be a lot of measures to choose from. The reason is, like, if there's only one measure to choose from, self-correction doesn't work. It's like you don't want to have a monopoly in economics or something like that. It's also, if there's only one measure everybody uses, it's very very strong intense incentive to game this particular measure. The next thing is, should be transparent. I think this is very very clear. It should be everybody should be able to understand what is going on when you calculate a particular measure and this number that comes out. You should be straightforward to see how this comes about. And it should also, in our opinion, be customizable. That is, to, for example, we think that different fields, different institutions, or even different individuals may have different preferences, what they think is important. Slightly related also, the next point should be bottom up, in the sense that it should be ideally driven by the community itself, should not be imposed on the community from top down. This is also very important, I think, for adoption. People will accept things much easier if it comes from the community itself, rather than from outside the community. And my last point on this slide is that it should be possible to revise measures over time. Like, for example, if it turns out that if everybody judges other people by their number of papers, the response of the people is to just use this famous salami slicing tactics, it should be possible to revise the measures you use over time to counter that, in a sense. Okay, so what should we do? Given that most measures we use actually in practice today don't fulfill all these properties that I listed on the previous slide. So suppose you have an open position, you want to hire someone, and you want to find out who you want to hire. So the best option, obviously, is to read carefully on every of your applicants, which is a daunting task, let's say, given that the numbers are typically very large and it's just not practical to do this. And it's also very hard to do this objectively, of course, since if you read papers of hundreds of people, how are you going to make sure your judgment is objective on that? So that's why we think it's not practical to just get rid of the whole idea of measures. Instead, we should try very hard to improve them and make them useful for the community. The question is, how could we possibly do that? And this is where our current future work comes in. So we do have this idea of how to tackle at least some of the problems usually associated with measures for academic success, which is basically what's in the title of the talk, these do-it-yourself measures. We do not have yet implemented anything or directly these do-it-yourself measures as we have in mind. I will talk about it in a second. But we have started working towards the goals and getting our hands dirty and have already created a few useful tools. So I will now first tell you about these tools we already built, and then tell you more about these do-it-yourself measures later. Okay, so there's this website which currently doesn't work. So just wanted to put it out for reference. Unfortunately, we didn't make it in time for now, for today, to get this domain working. I just want to show you some screenshots of what you could find there if it were to work today. And then I will describe how this works, what you see. So what you could see there, if you were to go there today, is that you get one of the features, which is the feature I want to talk about first, is you get an input where you can enter, it says here, author name, archive author ID, or ORCID. You can enter an author by their name, their archive author ID, or their ORCID. Or you can enter a number of names by any of these methods. And if you, for example, enter here the name Brian Green, and press enter, you get this as a result. So this is supposed to be a visualization of the research interest of Brian Green, who is a string theorist. So that's why basically you have here words like Calabi-Yau manifold and stuff like that. So what you see is a number of keywords which are hopefully descriptive of Brian Green. And the size of the keywords should indicate how important or how well such a word describes Brian Green. And then the color indicates if he has worked on this more recently or more in the past.
Are the keywords, like sometimes keywords are sort of a defined set of words, or is this just all the technical terms in all the publications associated with his name?
What
are the keywords?
Yeah, we'll talk about where this comes from in a second, but it's from his publications. I will come to that in a second. I just want to show the nice picture first. If you were on the website, you could even configure this cloud in a sense. You could like remove single keywords you don't want to have there, or you could exclude certain papers from being analyzed so that something which you actually do not think describes you well, you can exclude that. And some other stuff which I do not want to go into details about. So how could you use that? I mean, one thing is you could put it on your website, make it a nice visualization of what you work on. You could also not do it for yourself, but for your whole institute, like enter all the names of the people in the institute here, get such a result, and put it on your website. Before I come to the next feature I want to show you, I want to first tell you a bit about how we get to this. Yes?
I think this feature is already in the ADS.
Oh, really? You mean the NASA ADS? Yeah. Oh, that would be interesting. I have not seen that yet.
It's already there, yeah.
Okay, cool. Then the next feature will maybe be more interesting for you. Okay, let me anyway show you how this works in our case. So we take the metadata from the archive and identify keywords in abstracts and titles. Keywords are any phrase or single word or number of words that occur a number of times. And you keep the keywords which are very descriptive, and you throw away keywords which are just generic. For example, you want to keep something like Calabi-Yau manifolds, but you want to throw away something like therefore, or that is, or something. And just as a note, how we decide this is a keyword that is generic is one that doesn't tell you much about the archive category a paper is in. So if you could guess that you could guess the archive category from Calabi-Yau manifold, but you couldn't guess it from therefore. So that's the criteria we apply here. Then we have a list of keywords. But how do we know which keyword is important to which author? Yes, sorry.
Do you have a standard algorithm that you apply for the first step?
No, that is a basic custom build. Or it involves some standard components like these Porter stemming algorithm or stuff for
like term frequency, inverse document frequency, which is like a standard way to boost like significance of terms in text. I don't know if you know about that one.
I'm not sure.
Okay, it's fine.
Yeah, I didn't implement this myself, so I'm not the 100% expert, but I think it actually just works by counting frequencies of words and then calculating visual information with primary archive category and throwing out those that are have low mutual information with a primary archive category. Okay, the next thing is we do, there's machine learning, there's algorithms which can turn such. Okay, let me start by, we take a graph where keywords are connected that occur together in the same paper, and also authors are connected to keywords which they used. And then there's machine learning algorithms which can turn such a graph into a vectorization. What this means is, I don't want to go into any details here, just show you, give you an intuition what it's about. So for example, in the end you get vectors for authors and you get vectors for keywords. And the idea is that after running this algorithm, the vectors which correspond to similar topics are close, and vectors which correspond to topics which do not have anything to do with each other are very far apart from each other. Just as a very simple example, the vector for Brian Greene would be relatively close to the vector for the keyword conifold, but the vector for something like lithography, which has nothing to do with string theory whatsoever, at least as far as I know, is quite far away from the other vectors shown here. So that is basically, based on these vectors, we can get an idea of which keywords are close to an author. We can get also get an idea of which keywords are close to an author, although he never literally used them. For example, it may be that there's an almost synonymous term for conifold, which the author never uses, just out of personal preference. Then the vectors of these two should be really relatively close, and we should be able to identify both of them. Okay, so that's the basic idea. Based on that, we built the keyword clouds. But there's another thing we have already built based on these vectors, which I also want to show you. And that is, you can find similar authors to a given author. For example, you could take just the vector for Brian Greene and look which vectors are close by for other authors. Or you could take the vector for conifold and find authors who worked on similar topic, like take the vectors for authors which are close to the conifold vector. And we have implemented something like that also already. You can enter an author or a number of authors and or a keyword or a number of keywords. And if you then press the submit button, it will calculate an average vector of these vectors and you get a result. For example, for Brian Greene, this is what it looks like. These are all people who have worked with similar research interests, let's say. Okay, so you might ask yourself, why do you want to use that? I mean, one particular use case could be that you're organizing a conference, you're wondering who to invite. This could be a way to find people who work on a given topic, but you maybe not have heard about yourself so far. It does not take into account any kind of popularity, number of citations. It's purely based on the contents of the titles and abstracts of the people's papers. Okay, this is what we have so far to get ourselves started. Now I want to get to the promised do-it-yourself measures, what this is about. Right, okay. So now, do-it-yourself measures, what is the idea? The idea is that we want to extend our website, allow it for users to go there and assemble basically their own measures. What this means is, like, you select a number of factors you want to include in your measure. For example, you want maybe the number of papers, you want maybe the number of single authored papers, maybe you want the journal impact factors of the papers, the journals someone published in, and you give each of these factors a weight, and this constitutes your measure. You then the next step, you could say, okay, let's create a list of people I want to apply this measure to, and create such a list, save it, and then you can rank these people by the measure you just created. That's the basic feature of this thing. The next feature which is very important, we think, is that you should be able to share your measures with others. It should not be private, or at least there should be the option to share your measures. And you should be able to combine measures from other people. For example, you can say, oh, what my friend did is very useful, but I want to also include the number of co-authors of each paper or something like that. So that's the basic idea. Let me tell you why we think that is may be useful. Just as a reminder, what I thought would be good properties of not measures themselves only, but also how measures are used. So we think heterogeneity would be important. You could, by such a platform, of course, generate a lot of measures which different people find useful. So there's that. It is transparent. The whole code will be open source. The vectors which are included in each measure will also be visible, so you can always know what is going on. They're obviously customizable, like that's the main feature of this idea. It should be bottom-up, because this is done by the community itself rather than imposed top-down. And it would be possible to revise measures over time, obviously. So that's why we think it is useful to create such a website. We also think it would be interesting to aggregate which vectors people actually use, so we get an idea of what actually is important. So it might turn out that the age index is actually the best thing people, or the thing people actually find most useful, but you never know. We will see. This will be interesting. Also, we could introduce new kinds of things to measure, like we have these keyword vectors and author vectors. It would be interesting to see, to rank candidates by how well they match with your institute's vectors. For example, you could enter the list of people in your institute, and we could calculate how far away a given person is from your institute's research interest. That could also be included there. Yes. Okay, I want to make this point. This is not about finding the new best measure and tell everybody to use it. We also don't think that is even possible or desirable. Instead, we aim to create a community-driven platform where, in the end, there are a wider variety of measures which different people use, suiting their own needs, and that this would change the way measures are used. So, for example, it would be less easy to game a given metric if everybody uses their own custom-built measure. Okay, just one more thing I want to mention briefly. As I said, it would be possible to add new things to measure, like the keyword thing I already mentioned. We also currently have, as work in progress, some neural net which takes as input data and tries to predict like future age index or number of citations. And you could also imagine putting such a neural network into this website as one factor to select for your favorite measure. This is still work in progress, as I said. It's just I wanted to mention it also. We are experimenting with different inputs, like ordinary number of citations and such things, but also with input from this keyword author vectorization we already did. So now I think I was very fast. But okay. Yes, please.
So I'm thinking sort of big picture about why we want measures, but measures only matter to the extent that we want to use them
yes.
for something. And in general, in this context, it's we want a way to use past behavior accomplishments, whatever, to predict something. To predict, is this person likely to be a good faculty member in our department? Is this person likely to give a good talk
yes.
at my conference? And so, really, we want to validate our measures by actually testing whether they predict the thing that we want to be using them
yeah.
to predict. But does anybody actually do that? Or it's just, we're creating all these measures and this one makes me feel
yeah.
so I think it's really fine, and this one's really easy to use, so I think it's really
yes, yes.
fine. But none of us have any evidence of
there
any
is,
of are
yeah.
actually effective predictors of anything that we care about.
Yes, I mean, there's the obvious problem of defining what we mean by academic success.
Well, that's, I mean, if you're going to have a measure of success, in a sense, what you're doing is you're saying, let's define success this way, but without any validation for any other thing we care about.
I mean, yeah, what is done by a lot of people is actually like, you could, if you have some citation-based measure, for example, and you say, let's say the age index, There are a lot of studies which look at how predictive the age index is, for example, for the future number of citations or the future age index. Stuff like that is actually done.
And how good?
It's, yeah, the age index itself can reasonably predict the square root of the number of citations. But that's about it. And there are more complicated, there's also papers about more complicated things where you throw all kinds of inputs at some machine learning algorithm and see how good it performs over time. And you can get like decent results, but it gets worse, of course, with the time you go into the future. If you want to predict 1 year into the future, you're obviously much, much better off than if you want to predict 10 years into the future.
So maybe we shouldn't be talking about success as measures of success, but rather talking about these things as measures of whatever it is that they're measuring.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a measure of the accomplishment, I guess, and maybe it's a prediction of future accomplishment. And whether you define this as success or not, it's a relative thing.
I mean, you could think about using this in two ways. If you're hiring a committee, you think about using this in two ways. Right? One is, I want to hire people who are going to win prizes.
Yes.
And then, okay, great. So you get all the data and you see, does this measure predict prizes? The other way you can look at it is, I have a vision for the kind of science I want my department to do. I want it to be highly collaborative, or
yeah.
I want it to be interdisciplinary, or I want it to be whatever. And then I build the measure that I think most closely tracks that, and I use that. So it seems like there's two, either you have some external definition of success, or you have an internal vision that you consider to be a successful.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And you should, I mean, very concretely, you could then say, I want people who, I don't know, have a blog. We don't have data on this, but it's a very hypothetical example. You could say, I want people who, what I said earlier, align with my research interests, just on a content-wise, not success-wise. But it's a different, this is one thing, and the other thing is knowing how good this actually then predicts certain behavior in the future. This would be too, you had evaluated for each measure on their own, of course. This is not part of the, I don't know who first often.
I was going to say one along those lines, one thing that I've started looking for is how frequently people are acknowledged. Mm-hmm. So not authors, like, because that for me speaks to some level of somebody's highly collaborative or helpful in the workplace, even if they're not an author. And
so is that something you can search on?
Yeah, I think one of the people I work with has a way to get that in ADS, so you can look for acknowledgements. And turns out that some of the most productive people at work are highly acknowledged. Right?
Okay, Andrew?
There was this really good paper about like all the incentives in academia, their intended effect, and then like all the bad side effects they produced, right?
I think it's on the table from this.
Yeah. So like, if you have, are you showing that table?
No, I don't.
Yeah, okay. I think like, you know, every time you create a measure that has some incentive, people will try and optimize for that, right? So
true.
And this table, which is really long, kind of shows that no matter how far you go down this incentive list, you can't fix things just with.
Can you send us a link to that?
Yeah, I'll put it in the white paper.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing with the bad incentives, so the idea here would be, it may be that the Parameter Institute ranks people by their measure and the, I don't know, Institute in Frankfurt brings people by another measure, and it would be hard, in the best of cases, to gain both of those metrics at the same time. So that is the idea behind the what we call heterogeneity. It would be harder to gain to game metrics if they are diverse. If everybody on this planet just ranks everybody by the number of papers, everybody will use salami slicing and game this metric. But it will be much harder if the people here use a different measure from the people there, and if they're not too similar, of course. I don't know if that works in practice, but
this works in sports, right? Like you can, you know, there are certain metrics in baseball or football that you can do better on if you just focused all your efforts on it. But if you have a big selection of metrics, it's much harder to gain, right?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but good point. You want to just say something?
We have. I mean, this is maybe this speaks to Andrew's point. So, for a while, we were doing fellowships by saying, send us your best paper, and we'll just do that.
Interesting.
Your Islamic devices are doomed, right? Because every single idea is spread out over several papers. So if you give us one, it's going to look terrible. And we, in that case, it really allowed us to select for people who were, you know, big picture thinkers and were just optimizing for something else.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Is there another? Okay. And I'll just quickly give my summary, and then I'm already done. So we think that meshes do have issues. I think we can all agree on that. But we also believe that using meshes is a necessary thing for pragmatic reasons. We also think that do-it-yourself meshes could potentially help in that regard. But this is not currently available. What we do have currently available is tools for creating these keyword clouds, which may already exist on ADS, and a tool for finding similar authors, although the website is currently not working. So let me just end by saying that we hope that in this way, meshes could actually help scientists. Thank you. Any more comments?
So,
yes.
What you mean is different universities will hire based on their own interest and their own understanding of academic success, right?
Yes, for example, this would be good.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Fine.